Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to Tuesday, a minute past the hour. The clock on the production machine is temporarily, at least, synced to the clock on the wall, which is accurate. That's why we ran over last night. My apologies to Rick Smith. That and some really good conversation. My apologies to Mike. All good? Good. No, it really is. It's a minute and a half past the hour. We begin this Tuesday evening program with just a little bit of an observation, if I may. First of all, thanks to those of you who continue to contribute to keep things going here at the Horn. It is badly needed and much appreciated. And secondly, I'm beginning to wonder if maybe, just maybe, there may be more in the audience in our little family. It numbers in the thousands, actually. Who are betting that the world does end this Saturday. You know, because then, you know, there won't be any bills to pay, so why bother? But, right. But as it stands, we need to bring in about 16 contributors via the Thrifty 250 tonight. That's 16 folks, 10 bucks a person, to sort of stay even with things, or close to even, as the case may be. If you hit the PayPal button or use the snail mail address, it makes no difference. They're both available to you there at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. 16 people, 10 bucks a piece, works out something less than 5 cents per hour of programming. Less, really, when you consider all the work that goes into it by, the entire uncompensated crew, including yours truly. That's the starting place. And I hope, well, you know me, I'm a skeptic. I don't know if you saw the Doonesbury strip. I noticed it today because it runs on Bart Cop with the fundy who lives next door to Zonker Harris who gave him the Mercedes. Why don't I live next to any fundies who own Porsches or Lamborghinis or Maybachs or Maseratis? Oh, well, maybe because I'm not a character in a comic strip. But the Rapture Ready, the prices, by the way, for Rapture Ready Pet Care, which promises to place your pet with a loving loving atheist home, is up and running. Although they've had to institute a bit of a surcharge because of all the hullabaloo attending the predicted end of the world this Saturday. Doodle is going to be so pissed. It's her eighth grade prom, you know. If the rapture happens, a lot of the kids who claim that they're going to get raptured are kids that Doodle would just as soon not have to deal with anyway. Can't really blame her. Fundies aren't very pleasant people to be around. Just as long as the prom goes off. If the DJ raptures, there will be a problem. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Now, I got to thinking about it because right before showtime, I got an email in from our buddy Ron in Raleigh. Subject line, the end is nigh. Bob, I'm writing this on Tuesday because tomorrow and Thursday I will be a manpower beast of burden. I hate to miss prayer meeting Wednesday, and this Wednesday is particularly tough to miss. I'm sure you're aware that the world comes to an end on Saturday. No need to fix that roof. Convenient, huh? I guess it has its upside. But then again, they're rapturing all the Christians on Saturday. That means I'm still going to have a roof problem and probably a lava problem. Then again, asphalt shingles melt in lava, right? Most everything melts in lava. Anyway, Ron says, I'm sure you will address the coming rapture and what we need to do to prepare to get new houses and cars left behind by all our blessed neighbors. I will be listening to the replays, so I'll be getting my info a little late. I'm sure your input on this subject will be cogent and thorough. And it was that last line, cogent and thorough, that made me wonder if Ron actually knew he was writing, realized he was writing to me. Cogent and thorough? Me? Really? That sounds like the kind of email you'd write to Tom Hartman. Cogent and thorough. Not me. Thanks, Ron. There is a big stack of stories, to some of which are carryovers, admittedly, from last night, but it's not like day-old bread. These things are still fresh because they are absolutely imbued with the preservative powers of utter stupidity. Stupidity, like evil, is a preservative. But before we get started, I want to go to an email I got from our buddy Grant. And it was quite thought-provoking for me this morning. Grant wrote, Dear Bob, I wanted to present a disagreement I've been harboring on an issue. I hope you get something out of it, and a little smiley symbol. As follows. Many times you have expressed your disdain for exhorting folks to buy seeds and begin preparing for a systemic collapse or other occasional historical nuisance. Almost without exception, you concede the framing of such things to a Beck in the Wind or Alex Horseshit Jones Conspiracy, Inc., trademark, Rube Shearing Venture. Nothing could be further from the true nature of those preparations in my estimation. As I see it, those assholes have yet again hijacked something prudent and thoughtful in order to line their pockets and jump up and down on the panic button of an unsuspecting brain for fun and profit. However, there is a completely separate and healthier approach to the same preparation patterns that I believe should be promoted by progressives and progressive liberal talk show hosts everywhere, thus pulling it from the cold dead fingers of the neocon asshats that only appear to dominate that genre of practicality. Grant continues, I take as my local example the Transition Towns movement. We have small discussion and planning groups in every conceivable area of running a community that works to substitute long-distance shipped goods with local versions. And I'm all for that. That's the Tina versus Lois debate. There is no alternative versus locally owned, internally sustainable, maybe? These goods are generally better quality and do not bear the overheads of the fossil fuel industry. It also promotes urban food production, following the logic that production at the load points is never a bad thing if you can do it. It hosts classes in relearning lost skills that your grandparents could do in their sleep, but that little Johnny, the Xbox warlord, could not figure out to save his little hide. It's a precious little hide, Grant, by the way. Precious little hide. It has the potential to become a version of 4-H plus Grange movement, all rolled into one, and the appeal of such a thing will only get stronger as the stresses of an unsustainable system continue to come to a head. So by buying seeds, not gold, not silver, you not only gain the calories of the planted and growing food, along the way you meet and collaborate with others going in the same direction, and guess what? You've just assembled or found your local support network or team. By more and more people growing food and making calories available, you are significantly lowering the potential desperation of a system collapse. Additionally, cloned meats, as far as my contacts in the grocery business tell me, are already being sneaked into the supply on the market. If you wish to avoid that nightmare, finding a local source of meat protein instead of relying upon national distribution systems makes a lot of sense. What will help the most so far as momentum goes, those in liberal show business will take it up as their sub-project to promote these very things. Grant, I hope you don't think I'm in liberal show business. Just saying. Very things, and feature a whole lot of how-tos, conversations, and lectures on this very practical and relevant area of civic preparation, and not ceding to the right wing. I consider my activities in this area as an exploration of civic excellence, among other things, and at no time does that asshole of a rodeo clown ever enter my mind. I submit to you that your constant exposure to Rwanda Radio has tinted your lens on this tack, and that, yes, even you really do need to turn the damn thing off and approach it from another angle. Rather than promoting the ensconcement of armed buzz-cut dickheads in bunkers or happy bubbles, I'd like to think I'm promoting the most natural form of survival to the greatest number of people, a community of individuals that support one another, and in aggregate alleviating the suffering of those caught in any future societal fracas. Let's not do zombie apocalypse, eh? And I think if we work together, many, many of us won't have to. Signed, Grant. There's a lot of good stuff to think about in there. And when I, you know, when I talk about the seed saving and stuff, on the one hand, you've got the seed bank in Norway, and as long as it's not being run by Mormons, I'm down with it. Because somewhere there, well, it's kind of like the Appalachians. During the last great glaciation of the North American continent, Appalachia was the seed bank for the entirety of North America. There is nothing growing anywhere on the North American continent that was not seeded from Appalachia after the glaciers receded. Which is one of the worrisome things about having Appalachia disappear. This is, after all, the most biodiverse temperate rainforest on the planet. Appalachia. Temperate rainforest. It's a little gray and rainy here in mid-May, and I was thinking about that earlier today, going, could sure use some damn warmth! Dry! I'd like to feel the sun on my flesh! Bearing in mind that I can tolerate feeling the sun on my flesh for about 15 seconds before I have to run inside and dip myself by the heel. We've got this hoist and pulley thing in SPF Avogadro's number before I fry. Because we've done things to the atmosphere that made the protect. Well, but never mind, that's another conversation. Bear in mind that the seed banking, a lot, or at least in the food storage, is a central tenet of the Magic Underwear Bunch. Someday, you know, the right wing is so fond of pointing at the Muslim community and saying, well, they mean to convert the whole world to Islam and make us all Mohammedans, and they'll do it at the point of the sword. And if we don't worship that Muhammad and that there Allah fella, well, they'll kill us all. Well, you see, Mormonism is a 19th century hokum bunko version of Islam. It lifts heavily and freely from Islam, frankly. The polygamy, I got two wives and it's mighty bigamy. The polygamy, mass conversions. Only the way they frame it is when the big die off and starvation time comes, we're going to have so much food stored that the only way you can have food, and we'll be glad to feed you as long as you convert to Mormonism. It's no coincidence that this August, the Beckerhead, Glenn Beck, has declared that he's going to hold a rally in Israel. Yeah, really. More on that later, I hope. And so when you hear the right wing spew for emergency seed stocks, what you're hearing is commercial content geared toward getting you to do business with a Mormon seed company. For all I know, headquartered out of somewhere near Deseret, Utah. That's what that is. I don't disagree with Grant's thesis, because my forebears, as recent as my parents, my mother in particular, was a seed saver. Even as a little boy, growing up, the best, if we grew cantaloupes, the best cantaloupe she'd save the seeds from for next year. The prettiest tomato, save seeds from. Because that's a classic Depression-era mindset. Don't buy seeds, save them. You always set back some of your potatoes for seed potatoes. You set back some of your dried corn for seed corn. Because that's the beauty of hybridization. That's how the seed companies got farmers by the short and curlies, was by creating corn seeds that would germinate only once and produced sort of mule seeds for the coming season. So you had to go back and buy them from them again because it made such pretty corn. Right? I mean, it's noble and notable. That's how farmers up to, what, the late 19th century? Every farmer between the late 19th century and everybody who ever put a seed in the ground beforehand had seed to put in the ground because they had saved seed from the previous season. Right? It was only when corporatism and capitalism began to run amok that people began to realize that, hey, we can sell stock, and then we'll pay the stockholders by gouging the hell out of the farmers who make sure that the stockholders can eat. What could possibly go wrong? And that brings us forward into a world of Monsanto and Frankenfoods. Grant mentions in his email the fact that they're sneaking cloned meats into the diet. Well, 70 to 80%, according to that article I referenced on the program last week, don't ask me for the link, 70 to 80% of the processed foods we eat, animal and vegetable, 70%. If it's processed food, you know, 70 to 80% is comprised of genetically modified materials. And then of course, there's the latest food horror story out of China. There's a growth chemical that's been freely used of late in China. What's it called? For chlorofenneron. See, that's how, when you're a professional broadcaster, that's how you get to sound like you know what you're talking about. Before you ever go on the air, you look at the word and you say, for chlorofenneron, just like first grade, you syllable by syllable. For chlorofenneron. It's a growth accelerator. Gee. Most other places, growth accelerators would be considered, I don't know, cancer. But in China, where they can't produce food fast enough, where even a high government official recently bemoaned the food production people, farmers, who will skirt the laws and sort of work around the frayed edges of the structure and use things like deadly poison instead of another chemical and thereby, you know, kill old Rufus the bloodhound with a toxic bag of old Roy's the kibble down to the local Wally World. Well, the latest casualty is apparently the watermelon crop. Time magazine, reporting on a story in The Guardian, of course. Why are these links never to American journalism enterprises? I don't know. But, according to a story in The Guardian, farmers tending fields throughout eastern China injected, you know, kind of like, oh, I don't know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, injecting steroids into the rumpuses of his fellow weightlifters, and one of the fellow weightlifters injected his rumpus as well. They injected 4-chlorofenaron into individual watermelons. I mean, this ain't Miracle-Gro, okay? I mean, this isn't just hook it up to the garden hose and spray. These are steroids for plants? Makes them have tiny, tiny seeds. No, I don't know. But they inject each individual watermelon with 4-chlorofenaron, and it makes the watermelons ultra plump. But then it also makes the watermelons go quite crazy. No, I don't mean like zombie apocalypse crazy. But unrestrained growth is seldom a good thing in a living organism. In many instances, like I said, we tend to call it cancer. Yeah. One farmer told the China Central Television News Agency he couldn't sleep anymore at night because he couldn't get the image of the explosive melons out of his noggin. He's got 8 acres of watermelon. All told, in Danyang region, about 20 farmers and 115 acres were affected by the 4-chlorofenaron craze. Isn't it amazing? We live in a world that doesn't even have the patience to let a watermelon become a watermelon. I remember being a boy and how special watermelons were, even in the South. And when watermelon season came, we ate them till we couldn't eat them anymore. And we planted them in the backyard. And, you know, Mama, are they ripe yet? No, honey, they're not ripe yet. When are they going to be ripe, Mama? In God's good time, baby, in God's good time. But now, because, among other things, China has no ability to police itself beyond certain issues of freedom of speech and so forth, the for-profit watermelon industry can't get the watermelons to market fast enough, just like old chicken processors here in the United States can't wait for a chicken to grow up in God's good time. They've got to be jacked up with hormones and hurried along and have their little beaks filed off or whatever. Because the market, the almighty market, demands that these operations be profitized at the cost of whatever dignity a chicken has to begin with. Frankenmelons? Is that what we're talking about here? Frankenmelons? When I was a boy, you'd go out in the country and there'd be a semi-tractor trailer parked on the side of the road with a sign. Usually said, watermelons, 50 cents. And they were the great, big, long, fat ones. And you'd buy two or three and set them in the fridge or in a cooler or wherever, get them nice and cold, and just have an absolute watermelon frenzy some Sunday afternoon, maybe after church. Maybe on a Saturday afternoon out on the side porch. But see, that's all gone now. I don't know if any of these Frankenmelons are coming to the United States, but if they are, I give it a couple of weeks before we start seeing the story about Rofert and Marvelline were powerful fond of watermelon every summer, as is just about everybody in the Deep South. And Rofert and Marvelline had picked up the first one of the season, and they were all excited. It was Saturday afternoon. The sun was high and blue in the sky. when Rofert, approaching the watermelon, was suddenly killed by a piece of watermelon rind shrapnel that took him right through the eyeball. His widow, Marveline, could not be reached for comment. She was said to be too stricken with grief and horror at the idea they had been killed by something so beloved to them. You know, it's moments like this that you just feel like your world's gone, you know, I don't know, 90 degrees off axis. Killer watermelons? Really? That poor Chinese farmer who can't get any sleep at night because his watermelon patch sounds like somebody popping corn out back. And I'm sure it has a real horror aspect to it for him as well, because that's his crop. And now all his watermelons have exploded. He may damned well starve over the winter. About 3-4 hours ago, David in Tennessee put me onto the watermelon story, and I immediately realized that in many ways we were talking about with the watermelon story and, you know, the Chinese frenzy to commercialize everything as quickly as possible. That we were talking about the same thing that Grant was talking about in his email. We're still on Grant's email, by the way, if you haven't noticed. I'm not saying don't plant a garden. I think if you can plant a garden, wherever you can plant a garden, you should plant a garden, even if you can only plant a garden in a clay flower pot. Do try to make sure that it's not radioactive clay, though. But where I begin to have a problem, and I think Grant alludes to it, let's not do the zombie apocalypse, eh? He writes. Well, if this stuff goes down, we are gonna do the zombie apocalypse. And there won't be any choice in the matter. Hungry people, you see, are generally not nice people. Or perhaps I should amend that to say hungry people in the midst of a collapse of civilization aren't nice people. When they see food, they tend to go and take it. And frankly, we're also talking about a country that is comprised by a lot of right-wingers, who, while they have been exhorted to buy seeds by Glenn Beck, haven't. Because they're more than willing to be the grasshopper that takes the food from the ant. Hint, we're the ants. If you have a little enclave of like-minded people who are willing to plant and grow things, that's wonderful. It's great that you're going to kind of be off the industrial food grid and you can eat fresh potatoes and fresh broccoli and fresh squash and fresh bell peppers and cucumbers and God Almighty knows tomatoes. Oh, a bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich made with lettuce and tomatoes fresh out of the garden when God has breakfast. That's what God has. And yes, God eats bacon. But the people, if there really is a crisis of the kind of the proportions that Grant discusses, the people who are starving are likely also to be very well armed. And they will take by force what is not given them, and whatever is given them, I will tell you now, will not be enough. they will be locusts. Like many Americans, they will only, it'll be exponentially worse. They will be concerned only with their immediate food gratification. And since a bunch of them will be right-wingers and or Christians, they will be willing to kill you for it in the name of their God and their economic system, which by then will have transmogrified into a sort of militant, violent Jesus cult predicated upon survival of the, well, a Darwinian model of survival of the fittest. And the fittest will be them, and it will be determined by the fact that they've got a lot of guns that they, their fathers, their grandfathers, their great-grandfathers, their great-great-grandfathers, and their great-great-great-great-grandfathers have been collecting for just such an occasion. So all I would suggest is, for all the peacefulness that it may inhabit the urge, if you're going to do something like Grant is talking about, in addition to buying seeds, you should be buying bullets. In addition to buying composting barrels, you should be buying 50 caliber machine gun barrels. Because if it gets to zombie apocalypse, you're going to need them. Because there won't be a next year's crop unless you've got the... And remember me, I'm the nonviolent guy. This also sort of ties into the biblical notion of he who loves his life shall lose it, but he, you know that one. Do you see what I'm getting at? I don't think that I'm tainted by Radio Rwanda. I watch very, very little of it. But what I am tainted by, if anything, is the fact that I understand deeply, thoroughly, the mindset of the right-winger. They live in a perpetual state of imaginary entitlement. I'm not talking about entitlement. I hate that word. I suspect that entitlements was a word invented by Republicans to describe things like Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid as a way of indirectly calling it welfare. Who are the biggest users of welfare in this country? The corporations? The rich? I mean, what is the tax cut? What is the Bush tax cut for the rich? If it is not one giant, great big, humongous, gargantuan tax welfare giveaway. Screw a little block of cheese, baby. Oh hell, the well-to-do and the right wing and God's own white people will make us feel like crap over a bag of rice, a 3-pound block of cheese, and some instant mashed potatoes and dry milk. They'll make a human being feel like living feces over that, while at the same time they're sticking both arms out and raking in their tax cuts. So they won't have to pay an extra, oh, I don't know, $15,000, $20,000, $75,000, depending on how many millions they have. No, but don't you take that government cheese! That means you're a welfare queen, because St. Ronnie Reagan done said so, and you're probably driving a cataract. So even if you want to have a sort of cooperative farming, gardening thing, you're going to have to deal with predators. You're going to have to deal with bunny rabbits. You're going to have to get out there that will eat you down. You're going to have to deal with deer. The reason I can't have a garden here is because I've got a herd of freaking deer that can take down countless hours of human labor in a matter of a night. I've seen it happen, and I'm too depressed to let them do it again. You're going to have to deal with those kinds of predators. You're going to have to deal with, the blight on your tomatoes, and you're going to have to deal with potato bugs. And yeah, you're going to have to deal with the me conservatives if it gets really ugly. Because the mindset that obtains with them is the same mindset that obtains with every other idea that they have. And that is that they are more entitled to life on this little blue-green marble hurtling through space than you are. Yeah, just got a note in from Jim. Attack of the Killer Tomatoes? Yeah, who would have imagined that a kitschy sci-fi film about killer tomatoes would have wound up in 2011 or 2764 from the founding of the city? Who would have imagined that that would have turned out to be scientific nightmare reality in the 21st century? The attack of the exploding terrorist watermelons. Dang, you know, just dang. And, you know, frankly, where a lot of the terrestrial broadcasters are concerned, Grant, don't look for them, liberal or otherwise, to promote this unless someone is paying them to. Because that's the model that's how it works. That's how terrestrial radio works. You have to pay if you want to promote. And I would suggest that, no, not buying seeds. You'll have to buy them the first go-round, but thereafter, never buy another one. Because if you're not buying seeds, then there's no risk that you're being practiced upon by the Monsantos of the world. Good luck. Good luck to anyone. Like I said, I would love to have a garden, but my tiller disappeared several years ago, and I worked like a dog. I had that soil nice. 125 tomato plants, 72 different sorts of hot peppers. I had corn, okra, potatoes, beans, squash, cucumbers, pumpkins, a couple of different kinds of melons. Well, I had a load of stuff. And one night, Bambi and Bambi's pals came through and destroyed it all. So I hope the folks at PETA will forgive me. They won't. They're not a very forgiving bunch. If I don't get all warm and squishy about Bambi and the poor little deer, the poor little rats with antlers that exist because we maintain the herd, because deer hunting means a lot to West Virginia's economy. But because there's so much poaching, the State Department of the wildlife folks don't have any idea what the actual herd population is. And so you wind up with these massive just tribes of young'uns and does, and they will. A deer will browse anything and take it down to the ground if they like it. That's what they did with the tomatoes and the peppers. Don't send me the emails about using human hair or urine. The deer around here live in such close proximity to human beings that nothing human really puts them off. Unless it's a human with, a .30-06. And you can't even do that without going to prison. Well, jail. So it's a nice idea. And frankly, I think everybody would be far better off if they raised some portion of their own food, just for no other reason than as a general reminder that food doesn't come from the grocery store. And that food fresh tastes vastly better than food frozen or food canned. David in Tennessee writing, "Well, Bob, I got both. Got a tomato eggplant plot and a fine little steel gun that chambers low powder charge holler points that make really nasty exit wounds. Here's hoping I only end up harvesting the tomatoes and the eggplants." Here's hoping that you'll have some fine BLTs. Next year, you're going to have to expand into lettuce, David. Because lettuce doesn't even taste right anymore. But I thought that had all the earmarks of an interesting beginning for the show this evening. Because make no mistake, the American people are not exceptional. The American people are not special. We are spoiled, we are pampered, we are anesthetized, and by virtue of the fact that we have been taken so far away from the land, this is a good point in time for me to remind you that if you haven't, you probably should read Joe Bajant's last book, Rainbow Pie, available at Amazon. I was not paid for that promotion. But he talks about these things. He talks about a disembodied, disaffected, dysfunctional, formerly agrarian class that have been sent to fend for themselves in the urbanization of America, and who were not at any in any wise prepared for it, and still felt the call, the persistent call to come back to the land year after year after year. This ground where we live used to have a barn, chicken coop, a tool shed, grapevines, cisterns. It's all gone now. It sort of fell to ruin during the last years of my grandmother's life. But it was truly sustainable, as was my great-grandfather's farm just out the road here. Apple orchards, plum orchards, peach orchards, pear orchards, grape arbors, wheat, corn, beans, squash, peppers, everything. You want mustard? Well, you go out and you let the mustard plants that you eat the greens off of during the spring and summer, you let it go to seed in the end, and you save the mustard seed and you mix it with a little vinegar and a little salt, and the next thing you know, you got mustard. Yummy mustard. And then where are you going to get the vinegar? Well, the vinegar's going to be from the cider that went bad, because that's what you're raising the apples for, because you got a cider press. There was a little holler my mother showed me once. The sun practically never reached it, and the spring that came out of the side of the mountain was ice cold. And so when the butter would be churned, or the cheese made, or merely storing the milk, or separating out the cream, that's where that would be done. A natural refrigerator. Hillbillies, as I have been wont to say, were sustainable before sustainable was cool. But there's only one problem with all of this. It comes at a cost. Because these things don't take care of themselves. They are not self-perpetuating. It comes at a cost of back-breaking labor, that begins at sunup and ends not even at sundown. It is a world that is hard on the men who do it, and harder still on the women. If I had some way of working wirelessly, I could take a camera into the house, and I could show you what that means. I could show you Pa Davis and Loney. Loney, who at 48, my age, looks like she's 102. And Pa Davis, who looks the same age, but had looked that way for 50 years. I could show you Virginia and old man John Potter. She, kind of chubby, high cheekbones, hair pulled back in a psyche knot, seated primly and ramrod straight on a cane-backed chair with a Bible in her lap. She, old before her time. And old man John. Now, those two were my grandmother's grandparents. They were the Potters who raised the Potter girl who married the Goad man, who were the parents of my grandmother. Old man John Potter with a merry twinkle in his eye, no Bible in his lap, the photograph shot more portrait style, just from about the center of his chest up, and a floppy old felt hat still on his head. I could show you photos. They're on my computer here. Of my grandmother with one of her first one-room schoolhouse classes. And most of the children showing some sign of malnutrition or another, and wearing clothes that they would wear every day of their lives until they outgrew them and had to have new. Or I could tell you about Long Billy McClung, the first white settler on the Meadow River not far from me, who plowed with his hand on with his left hand on the plow and a cocked musket in his right hand. And his wife, who would do her sewing work with a musket to her right and her sewing basket to her left. This is that sustainable culture. And so it's one of those be careful what you wish for moments. But it won't be Indians this time. No. It will be something far, far worse. Rather than being people who were dispossessed of the land they had and resented it, it will be right-wingers and Christians and fundamentalists who believe that they have a right to the labor, the fruits of your labors, even though you're willing to share. Sharing's not good enough. We haven't said this in a little while. Perhaps it's appropriate to remind. They want it all. And unless you've got walls around your little sustainable community about 10 feet thick and 30 feet high with 50 caliber machine guns on every corner, they will take it all. Because the right wing are the pampered babies of privilege. and they will make a little slice of attempted paradise into an unmitigated hell on earth. I've probably spent too much time on this topic, but I couldn't resist, because it touched too many other things. So I will beg your indulgence, because there's other things to do. There's some funny stuff. And some more serious stuff. I said we'd have some leftovers from Moran Monday, and we do. This concerns a piece that has since been pulled. Nicole Bell highlighted it over at Crooks and Liars. She does great work. You familiar with a publication called Psychology Today? Well, they put it up online just long enough for the world to go, ah! And then they pulled it. But there is a cached version. It really did happen. Offering it as an objective scientific study, Psychology Today put up on their website the work of one Zantoshi Kanazawa, entitled, sit down. No, do me a favor, sit down. Strap yourself in if you have to. I don't need to hear about you getting arrested because you ran out into the yard screaming. Again, just in case anybody's afraid that the chronosynclastic infundibulum has hit and this we've time traveled. No, we haven't. It's 2011. And Psychology Today featured an article called Why Are Black Women Less Physically Attractive Than Other Women? 35 years ago, this would have been a joke segment on Saturday Night Live. In fact, it was. It featured rising star... political star Andrew Young and Garrett Morris. But this ain't funny. This was held out as reality. And I'll tell you the truth. I immediately thought of when I saw this story? I thought of our good buddy John, who is a real live, honest to God, no kidding archaeologist. And the really, really perceptive note that I received from him back when we were all sort of having a giggling fit over that scientific study out of Britain that claimed to prove that right-wingers, repiglicans, conservatives, baggers, birthers, deathers, tenthers, fourteenthers, corpsers, booger-eaters, that they have a bigger lizard brain, and we liberals, we progressives, we decent human beings have a bigger cognitive brain. And it was all real funny for a little bit. And then I got a note from John saying, you know, be careful with this, Bob. Because every now and then, science just loves to sort of wander off into the weeds, and the next thing you know, they're declaring that they've found a scientific reason for why one group of people are better than another group of people, and the next thing you know, you get a holocaust. Well, I'm extrapolating and expanding, but that was the thrust of John's message. And I thought of John immediately when I saw this. Why are black women less physically attractive than other women? Consider that. Consider the title. A question like that presupposes that it is an established fact, I'm having trouble speaking here. That title treats as established fact that black women are less physically attractive than other women. Huh? It's breathtakingly stupid. The cached version has apparently been disappeared. God, I hope this wasn't an Onion article. But, really? Could this possibly have been the work of the Yes Men? This Psychology Today doesn't seem like an appropriate target for the Yes Men. Peabody Cole? Sure. Apparently a lot of other people took it seriously. A website called Student Activism has a blog post by Angus Johnston, a historian and advocate of American student organizing. He writes, "The internet is blowing up this morning over Psychology Today's latest bit of link bait, a supposedly scholarly analysis that claims to prove that black women are less attractive than other women and speculates as to why." He continues, "The whole thing is a pile of crap, not just because it's absurdly racist and obnoxious, which it is, but because it's utterly scientifically incoherent. There's a lot of stupidity in the piece," says Angus Johnston. And I'll be linking to some more through takedowns later, he says, "but for me, one sentence stood out from all the others. For example," and you have to talk with your teeth clenched when you do this because it sounds all academic. "For example, because they have existed much longer in human evolutionary history, Africans have more mutations in their genomes than other races." Woo! That's crazy-making. I really am. I'm going to install straps in the broadcast chair here. In their genomes than other races. Never mind the fact that the entire idea of race is a construct created by white people. Tribes? No. Clans? No. Races? Yes. White people. All for the purpose of justifying ex post facto determinations of the superiority of said white people. Why wasn't this published in, like, Cracker Monthly or something? Oh, well, wait, they wouldn't publish something, by Zantoshi Kanazawa. This is breathtaking. But to get back to Angus Johnston and let him, beyond what I said about, you know, race being made-up BS, there's also what he points out. Why is this the stupidest sentence in the whole stupid article? Because, and I can't believe I even have to type this, all humans are descended from common ancestors. Everybody who already got that, raise your hand. This is just like Romper Room. I can see the hands. No population of humans has existed longer than any other because we all share the same great, 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 and so on grandparents. One group may have left Africa earlier or later than another, but we've all been on the planet the same length of time. Because, see, for it to be otherwise, there would have to be, never mind concepts of race, there would have to be different subspecies of humans existing at the same time. But he points out, which means none of us have been mutating any longer than anyone else by definition. I read this last night. I really couldn't get to it last night during the program because I just wasn't prepared to deal with it. Not like I hadn't done my homework prepared, but just I was not prepared to do anything except at the stupidity of it all. But there are things that underlie this assertion that are equally disturbing that are real. Questions that I think deserve to be discussed. Why, for instance, are the most beautiful women of color why do they tend to be the ones who have been subjected to the most process, pervasive processes of whitification? Really? There are several photographs accompanying Nicole Bell's post, and they are all of women of color who have done one thing or another to their hair to make it look like white folks' hair. Do you remember, and wow, is this shallow? You remember the third Austin Powers movie that had, what was the character's name? Foxy Cleopatra. With the big old fro out to there. It's a comedy. So, yeah. Or do you remember the New Yorker cover that presented Michelle Obama with the great big Angela Davis fro? Yeah. If you think about that for a minute, it becomes a little bit disturbing. The role models that we hold up as role models of African-American female beauty tend to be light-skinned with lots of stuff done to their hair. Now, is that just me? Or is it a larger issue? Because there are other things that attend the abuse of women inherent in the culture. First of all, you know, this clown who wrote this piece of crap was filtering everything through the apparently a Western lens. Otherwise, he could have just as easily written an article titled, "Why Are Korean Women Less Beautiful Than Japanese Women?" or "Why Are Vietnamese Women More Beautiful Than Chinese Women?" But to have done so would have made that pointedly, just blatantly stupid. So it's all this is done through a Western biased lens. But I have to ask, within the Western context again, and the pervasive nature of Western culture into practically every corner of the globe, one way or another, in one form or another, I have to ask the overarching. I mean, look at clothing issues. How many times have you noticed a beautifully dressed woman, whether you're male or female, who is wearing some variation on an infantilization of a military costume? You know what I'm talking about. Little short waistcoat jackets with brass buttons, sailor dresses. Now, they serve no function. We're not talking about somebody who's in the Navy or in the Army, but they're very, you know, they will pop up from time to time. Or literally infantile styles of men's dress. All of these things are repressive in nature. As if women can't wear things that... No. A designer chooses to... No. This year, all the women will be looking like the field marshal. And I call BS. You know, part of it is just rampant consumer capitalism designed to drive women to the mall in a mad rush to keep up with fashion. I don't know any women who do that, frankly, but I'm told they exist. Mostly Agnes shops at Goodwill. for all of us. Men's fashion doesn't change. Oh, the lapels may get wide enough to land bomber on, or narrow enough to ice skate on, and the neckties may go from skinny to wide and back again. Braces may come in and go out and come back in. Pleated pants, not pleated pants, cuffs or no cuffs. Double-breasted or single-breasted, three buttons or two. But nothing essentially changes. An Oxford cloth shirt is an Oxford cloth shirt, and a guy who went to a garden party in Atlanta 50 years ago wearing a well-pressed pair of chinos and an Oxford cloth shirt and a pair of Basquiat's would be as unobtrusive there 50 years ago as he would be at the same one now. You can't say the same for a woman because we abuse women via fashion. And we determine beauty by fashion. And now I guess there's a clown out there. I mean, hopefully he'll never get to publish in Psychology Today again. And the person who put that up is, you know, no longer working, has joined the unemployed. God, I hope this wasn't a joke. Let me go again. Let me just sort of update. Anything? No, I don't see anything saying this is a joke. You know, consider the history of Lena Horne. Light-skinned enough to pass. I hate that word. And tormented for it. Nicole Bell says, and I think she is quite sagacious in her observation. Perhaps at another point in my life, I would laugh this off as the musing of someone too stupid to realize how racist he is. But we live in an environment where the President of the United States is repeatedly forced to produce his birth certificate to prove that he was born in this country, and where one of the leading candidates on the Republican side repeatedly characterizes the president's attitude as Kenyan anti-colonialist and produces dog whistles like food stamp president looking to make the entire country like Detroit. Those would both be Newt Gingrich. This is not, says Nicole Bell, an isolated event by an insulated individual. This is a nasty undercurrent that simmers below the surface all the time, that has been bubbling up more and more frequently, and after being tangentially part of some rather heated online discussions about race and privilege recently, I don't know that we can ever truly work towards a more progressive future without acknowledging and dealing with this. And I think she's right. But I would go further and say that in the course of that acknowledgement of a discussion on race, there also has to be a discussion about gender roles, gender stereotypes. You know, why does a Western woman still have to wear an utterly unfunctional gown in order to participate in a 1,000-year-old property transfer that makes her no longer the property of her father, but now the property of her husband? I mean, even the Sicilians, I think, stopped draping the bloody bedsheet out the window to satisfy the curious onlookers below. When does this there's a lot good about tribalism, but when does this silly horseshit tribalism end? When? You know, if a man showed up for work wearing blue jeans and assless chaps, and a flannel shirt, and galluses, and pointy-toed cowboy boots, and a hat, if he was anywhere but Texas, He would be bounced out on his ear as not being appropriately attired to do the day's business. God help the Texan who shows up in a toga. No matter the fact that that was as serious, you know, chalked and white, the toga candida, the absolute epitome of Roman aristocratic garb for a day of serious politics. God forbid he shows up anywhere in America. I mean, come on, walk, really, really. Walk, you're an executive with Goldman Sachs and you show up in a toga. Unless you're so rich as to be referred to as eccentric, he's getting sent home, if not fired. On the other hand, we have so infantilized women's fashion that if a woman shows up to work looking like she's just stepped out of the chorus of Pirates of Penzance, well, that's just fashion. And she's probably spent five times as much on her Pirates of Penzance dress as some guy spent on the bespoke suit that he's wearing that day. It's all abuse. It's a form of abuse. There's dressing up, and I get that. And then there's abuse. And I guess tangentially, I saw something the other night. We were clicking channels, and I stopped because Agnes said stop, and when Agnes says stop, I stopped clicking. And it was a rerun of, like, Pirates of the Caribbean 16 or whatever. And Keira Knightley, who was beautiful, was taking down some zombie pirate and said, "You want torture? I'll give you torture. Wear a corset." And you know what? She wasn't lying. There's a reason that Victorian drawing rooms had fainting couches, because the women couldn't breathe. How far are we from it? Not damned very. Choice? Okay. I'm all for choice. Hair dyes? Sure. Why not? Fingernail color? Okay. Those are... sure. You know, over here on the guy end, we get to pick out socks and neckties. Ooh-wee, I'm going to wear the paisley one today, honey. I'm going to go out there and be radical. I'm not going to wear the old school reptile. I'm wearing the paisley today. Neckties, of course, being nothing but the last vestige of the Renaissance codpiece. Do you bite your thumb at me? I do bite my thumb, sir. Everybody running around with swords and padded crutches. But, you know, it can start with a stupid statement like, "Why are black women less attractive than white women?" But then if you just take the edge of your fingernail and scratch a little bit at it, you realize that there is so much more to it. That the racism and the prejudice lays atop a layer of bigotry and fear that sits atop a stratum of misogyny and hate. And the further you dig, the worse it gets. You know what I mean? I suspect. So that's where we start for the evening. By no means are we done. Just got a message in from Danny. Preach on, brother. This is via my Facebook page. This is something that many African Americans have talked about and argued over for decades. It's not something that I've heard very many white people talk about. I don't even know if very many are even aware of it, or if they just don't want to deal with the many psychological effects of slavery and oppression. I'm going to start referring to you as the angry black man from now on. No, Danny, no! No! I don't deserve it. I don't deserve the honor. All I can do is sit here on the outside, because this is about you know, white folks and oppressive. But it's not. It's not about black folks, white folks. I mean, the dude was Japanese who wrote this stupid piece of crap. It's about humans. It's about humans. And our failure as humans to treat other people as humans. Because even an article with a title, "Why Are Black Women Less Physically Attractive Than Other Women?" Well, guess what? That title objectifies every female on the planet. Including my daughters. And your daughters. And your sisters. And your wives. See, to me, I don't think there's a more beautiful woman on planet Earth than my darling wife. In fact, I'm convinced of it. And I try to tell her that constantly. Not trying to stay in good graces, but just to let her know that... But my telling her that she's beautiful is not, I don't think, an objectification. Because it's not you're a beautiful thing, it's you in yourself are beautiful. I mean, when she smiles, God, it's like a song lyric. I got sunshine on a cloudy day. And for that, I count myself among the luckiest people on the planet. But I'll also knock wood. Because, you know, you never say never. I hope I'll never be as stupid as, say, Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, the Gruppenführer. Married 21, 22, 23 years to a beautiful woman, Maria Shriver, and just can't get through another day without getting it on with the help? Boom! Oppression again! Boom! Objectification again. We've got to guard against this stuff. Because I guess deep down in our sleazy, slimy, nasty little lizard brains, it's there to be tapped if we're so inclined. Whew. Damn. But I'm not, you know, I'm not holding myself or holding Agnes up. Agnes, freaking near a goddess. But all we have to do is try to see each other as people. And if you make a conscious effort to be aware of objectification and repression, you will see it everywhere. Not because you're imagining it, but because it really is there. It's there in the statistics that say that young women studying, little girls, prepubescent, start losing interest in mathematics at about grade 5. Not because they're not wired for it, but because stereotypical, cultural, oppressive, repressive norms begin to kick in. That change their lives without their ever consenting to have their lives changed. Why are black women less physically attractive than other women? Why are blondes less attractive than more attractive than brunettes? Why are redheads more frightening than blondes? It doesn't necessarily have to be race-based. But damned if almost all of it isn't gender-based. Even right down to some of the problems that cultures and subcultures have within our society. Look at the hell that transgendered people are put through. Most of them being male to female. If you worked at it, you could probably, through places like Pam's House Blend and Joe My God. You know, I'm so grateful for the year and a half or so that I was sensitized to all of this by Peter Godbold and his pioneering work with Strictly Confidential. You could probably find a story every day of a trans person being beaten nearly within an inch of their life or killed. And especially where male-to-female transgender cross-dressers, gender dysphorics, transsexuals, post- and pre-op, whatever, are concerned. Our culture wants to kill them the most because they are rejecting their male privilege. Because by their very existence, they're poking holes in the theory that just being born with a penis makes you better than someone who wasn't. Points out the ridiculous Sneetches, Dr. Seuss aspect of all of it. And like Nicole Bell, it's with us. It's all over the place. And as she said, I don't know that we can ever truly work towards a more progressive future without acknowledging and dealing with this. So I have filibobstered the hell out of the first hour and 22 minutes of this program. Hope you didn't mind. Your calls are more than welcome. Your conversation is urged, encouraged, and invited. You know the number 304-658-3333 on your nickel. On our toll-free line, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. And this and many other topics are open for discussion this evening. There's one out there. Okay, moment of shallowness. And I mean really, really shallow. Just a question. Have you ever seen and I think this is where we're going to go next. You ever seen that BW3 commercial? Now, I love their wings, even though they're corporate. And they've got a wall of freaking beer. It's a lot of fun. You ever seen that BW3 commercial where the guys want to keep on, and the women too. After all this, let's get it right. They want the football game to continue because they want to keep on drinking beer and eating wings because they're so yummy. And so a button gets pushed beneath the bar, and then something else happens. You ever seen that one? Yeah, you probably have. It's been bugging the hell out of me for a while for a completely trivial reason. But now we've got a reason to discuss it really honest and for true, no kidding. And we'll do that when we come back. By the way, looking for members of the Thrifty 250 tonight. And in the course of an hour and 24 minutes of broadcasting, none have appeared. You know, we've got to do six members of the Thrifty 250 every night in order to just stay even. And when we have to play catch-up, we have to add that together, so that's why we're looking for around 15. So it would be a great help if that could happen. Okay? Cool. So we'll take a break and come back. Your phone calls, that strange little story, and why I would be upset about a BW3 commercial. That's all ahead right here on America's listener-supported liberal voice on the horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, May 17, 2011.
Opening the floodgates of the mighty Mississippi.
It's bad. It's as bad as it gets.
Big oil's big fight for its taxpayer welfare.
And I would tell you that I don't think the American people want shared sacrifice. I think they want shared prosperity. And what we have to offer, but do you understand how out of touch that is?
Japan's nuclear nightmare. Surprise, it's worse than previously thought. Breaking the record for weather disasters, plus another blow for the climate change denial industry.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I couldn't understand how those five CEOs could come in before the United States Senate and the American people and say that going from 125 billion dollars in profits this year collectively among the big five oil companies to $123 billion this year if we take away those subsidies is somehow going to be a catastrophe.
Oh, Senator Bob Menendez from New Jersey, which part of we pay them to drill our oil and sell it back to us at obscene profits do you not understand, socialist? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, who would have thunk it? But the news out of Japan, all of these months, they've been telling us nothing to worry about. It's all not that bad. It's all contained. It's worse than previously thunk.
Yeah, surprise. And then a long nuclear nightmare at Japan's Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. Japanese officials over the weekend announced that, contrary to those initial reports, a full meltdown did occur at reactor number one within hours of the historic tsunami that inundated the facility and permanently disabled the plant's cooling system. Now, 2 months into the disaster, the melted fuel is believed to have burned large holes in the containment vessel, forcing officials to scrap plans to fill the building with water to stabilize the reactor. Japanese officials now say they hope to have the situation stabilized by next January.
That's in just Unit 1, where they now acknowledge that meltdown. Is there a concern that similar meltdowns have also occurred in some of the other units, like Unit 2 and 3?
Yes, but no confirmation on those yet.
All right.
More bad news for the mighty Mississippi.
It's bad. It's as bad as it gets. Thank God we haven't had any loss of life, but it's in terms of property damage and the lives affected, it's bad.
That was an emergency management official in Vicksburg, Mississippi, where the flood is projected to crest on Thursday. The Army Corps of Engineers has opened the floodgates on all three major floodways simultaneously for the first time since they were first constructed in the 30s. The measures have successfully relieved some of the pressure on the levees that have been restraining the mighty flood and will save the cities of Baton Rouge and New Orleans from catastrophic flooding. But tens of thousands of people in the designated flood zones, many poor and without flood insurance, will likely be displaced for weeks, possibly months, and some farmland may take years to recover. Now, if it seems to you like the last couple of years have been unusually full of big weather disasters, you're not crazy. It's true. Well, you may be crazy, but it's still true. 2011 has broken the record for the most weather disasters, costing more than $1 billion in damage this early in the year. The U.S. has already had 5 weather disasters costing more than $1 billion, and hurricane season hasn't even begun yet.
What do you think the price would be today if it was based on fundamentals of just supply and demand?
$4 billion in taxpayer subsidies every year. That's what the 5 biggest oil companies are fighting to keep in the midst of record gas prices and record oil industry profits. Despite a full court press by the oil industry and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, Senate Democrats will attempt to vote to remove those subsidies this week, possibly as early as Tuesday night, and kill those subsidies to use the revenue instead to pay down the federal deficit. But Republican Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said on Sunday the measure would not garner enough votes to pass. Finally, the climate change denial industry was hit with yet another blow this week when a major scientific journal formally withdrew a prominent study used by the denial industry on charges of plagiarism.
What?
The study, popularly known as the Wedgman Report, was federally funded on a request from House Republican Joe Barton, a prominent denier who famously apologized to BP last year for the BP oil disaster in the Gulf.
So we have an actual study that was actually gamed, not by the climate scientists, but by the climate science denialists. And this, of course, on the heels of last year's fake controversy spread by Fox News, the so-called Climategate controversy, that climate scientists were putting out faked data. when investigation after investigation since then has found that they weren't, and now we find that it's the climate change denialists who were putting out the faked data. Knock me over with a feather. More on that and the stories we did not get to today at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Bubble Genius, it's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second, it's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius, it's not your father's soap.
No, see, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius, we got your soap right here.
And got your bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
That tune out just as a sort of an example. How much music is written by men about how they've been wronged by women when the whole system is gamed against those self same women? It's just saying. Yeah, I think of Ted Nugent strutting around on the stage saying, "Hey Hillary, why don't you suck on this?" And, of course, good, upstanding, God-fearing Christians like Sean Hannity. You know, I'm not going to disavow him. Ted's a friend of mine. By the way, the other song at the front end of the break, that was from Steve Forbert. That was Samson and Delilah's Beauty Shop. That seemed much more appropriate somehow. But then again, the Samson and Delilah story. Evil woman ruins everything for the, you know, psychotic guy. But it goes all the way back, doesn't it? Sure it does, you know, and a man shall not put on the raiment of a woman, lest he be stoned to death and cast outside the gates of the city. Yea, verily, and God will not put him on the Christmas card list, you know. You ever get the idea, looking at ancient human prehistory, that somewhere along the way, things went terribly, terribly, terribly wrong? Yeah, me too. No, the story I was going to tell you, share with you, it's kind of a gear shifting, some kind of analogy. But we go to Ohio, and I told you. Now, during sports season, and it's still running as far as I know, there are a series of commercials, but the most prominently run one from this corporate chicken wing outfit called BW3 concerns a bunch of people in BW3 who want to keep on getting sozzled on cheap draft beer. It ain't that cheap at BW3. And eating what are, you know, really quite good wings when once you get around the whole hormones and steroids. You just got to do some, you know, push it to the back of your mind, disbelief sort of thing. But they're good once you've done that. I love me some wings. I am wing advertising susceptible. Okay? I'm powerless over wings. So, there's this one commercial, though, where one patron of the BW3 says, I sure wish this game would go into overtime. And the bartender, of course, overhears it and reaches beside the tap and pushes a little button. This panel folds out, and he punches the red button. And the red button lights up a light somewhere down in the bowels of some stadium, at which point a sort of CIA-looking guy in coveralls who's masquerading as a janitor goes into a secret control room. And there's a guy streaking down downfield with carrying the ball, and all of a sudden the guy in the coverall starts punching buttons, and sprinklers start popping up just as a tackler is about to take the guy down. Now, don't turn tune away because I'm talking about sports, because I'm not talking about sports. So one by one, the sprinkler heads pop up and take down these defenders, who, if that really was happening to them, would have shattered ankles and compound fractures and probably never walk right again. But, dang, it's funny, because, see, that feller's going to run into the end zone, and they're going to keep on sitting there getting sozzled on draft beer and eating them chicken wings, see? Right? So then the guy runs into the end zone, and woo, you know, and the last thing you hear is the announcer saying, looks like this game is going to overtime. Okay, now this part is for the sports fans. Do the people at what is this? The BW3 advertising campaign crew, because I watched this, and I kept going, wait a minute, what's wrong? No, this doesn't make any sense, because they're all partying. Oh, we're going to overtime. Bring me another pitcher and 15 more of them nuclear atomic hot wings. I'm going to hate myself in the bathroom in the morning. Right? Because the guy has just run into the end zone and tied the score. He has tied the score. Looks like we're going to overtime. Well, what is this? I don't get to watch it. Does a tie score with that? Do you not get to kick the extra point in the Canadian Football League or something? Is that where we are? Because it's not Division 1, 2, 3, or the NFL, because they'd kick the field goal and the game would be over and they would have won, and then all them sozzled people would have to go home and quit eating all them yummy wings. Get to go boxes or something. You see my point? Sports fans aren't stupid. Obsessed? Yes. Misplaced priorities? Absolutely. Stupid? No. Now, why in God's name, after everything that just went down for the last hour and 40 minutes, why in God's name would I go there? Because there's nothing more oppressive, really, when you get right down to it, than getting blown away. What do I mean? Well, like I said, we go to Ohio for this one. You know, there's a fad going on, and it's, of course, a fully funded corporate fad from the promulgated by the sick, psychotic, weird-ass freaks over at the National Republican Rifle Association. And it is to... I know we dealt with this in Tennessee, because I remember David in Tennessee telling me about the big kerfuffle over it down there. I just love that word, kerfuffle. About wanting to
wanting to allow God-fearing, America-loving, patriotic gun owners to take their firearms into the bar.
Really? That's the next battleground.
I want to be able to go out with, or take my gun with me and get all liquored up. And then probably shoot myself in the toe. Or somebody else's toe. Or maybe their head. You never know. Sometimes I get pissed off when I get to drinking.
Yeah, at the urging of the sick gun lobby, there are state legislatures all over the country that have or will craft legislation that allows the carrying of firearms into, and I quote, parks, schools, government buildings, university campuses, churches, and daycare centers. No, really, daycare centers. You know, it was so sweet. He was just born, and his daddy put a little 22 rifle, and it was one of them over-unders. It was a 22 rifle on the top and a 410 shotgun on the bottom, you know, because a small guy, and a little feller can handle that. Put it right next to him in the crib and said the Pledge of Allegiance to him and played him some Lee Greenwood. Daycare centers. Parks, schools, government buildings, university campuses, maybe the bell tower at the University of Texas. That would be appropriate, wouldn't it? Churches, because you really, you know, that's where you want to feel the warm caress of blue steel against either your sweating underarm or your right or left thigh. That's where you want to feel it. When you got that gun strapped on and you're thinking about the saving grace of Christ Jesus, and that blue steel next to your thigh just feels so graceful. Ohio is not to be trifled with. Ohio will not be outdone. Nope. Ohioans have to be able to protect themselves. That's what Danny Bub... No, really, that's his name. Danny Bub... Really, I'm not being a smartass. Danny Bub... Danny B-U-B-P. B-U-B-P? No, U-B-B-P. Danny Bub... Hell on a broadcaster, Danny Bub said today, you know, we hate popping peas into the microphone, Danny Bub. That's just a disaster. That's a popping bee, another popping bee, and a popping pee. Bub. Sounds like a bubble in a bathtub. Ah, goggles bee. Nope. Danny Bub says, you can't always count on law enforcement to be there to protect you. You have to be able to protect yourself. Yeah. So, among other things, the Ohio legislature has taken under consideration a law that would allow... that would allow God-fearing, upstanding, patriotic, gun-toting Ohioans to bring their God-fearing, upstanding, patriotic Ohioan shooting iron with them when they go to a bar. Or a resto-rant. Or... and it's all going to become clear suddenly. Or... an open-air arena like a sports stadium. I repeat, or an open-air arena like a sports stadium. You know, like the big horseshoe in Columbus, where they just love the people from the University of Michigan. Or maybe
Or maybe the stadium there by Lake Erie where the Cleveland Browns plays them some football. Now it becomes clear, doesn't it? We're a group of marketing geniuses who did not understand the meaning of the extra point, the point after touchdown, handed us a BW3 commercial that featured an insidious agent in the bowels of the stadium making sprinkler heads pop up to knock off the tackler so that the ball carrier could get through to the end zone. We now have, in reality, no kidding, I wouldn't pull your leg about this, the idea being put forward in the state of Ohio that everybody coming to a Cleveland Browns game against the hated Stellars can bring a shooting arm. I'm just thinking 600,000 different ways that this ain't gonna be a good idea. Really. I mean, you can all... Roethlisberger drops back. He evades one tackler, two tacklers. He looks downfield. He finds Hines Ward streaking along the sideline. Hines Ward catches the ball. He's at the 40, the 35, the 30. Bang! Hines Ward is dead! Come on, what are the statistical possibilities out of, say, 60,000 people in a sports arena that one of them, you know, I had the under, and if he'd have got away there, I'd have lost. Maybe we just need to change the name of this program to 2011 with Bob Kincaid, because I'm not at... I'm not at all comfortable with what 2011 is. Coming from David in Tennessee, Bob, it's all about the willing suspension of disbelief. You know, that was invented by, that phrase was first coined by Samuel Taylor Coleridge, in conjunction with either a mystical poem called Christabel or, in Xanadu did Kubla Khan the stately pleasure dome decree where Alph the sacred river ran through caverns of measureless to man down to a sunlit sea, or maybe the rhyme of the ancient mariner that involved albatrosses. Bob, if all that other can happen to make it to the TV box, you got to realize that's the BW3 Football League. They got their own league, Bob, and their own rules and scoring and stuff. Never thought of them. Well, you know, hell, Hooters has their own golf league. Ron and Raleigh, Bob, do we see the scoreboard? Perhaps they tech the extra point as moot. But it's still not... Well, okay, I can... Yeah, that it's a gimme? Ron also wanting to know, what is it with white people and guns? Bob, the only people who seem to want to have their guns on their hip, except for thugs in the hood, at all times, are white folks. They also seem to have a desire to bust a cap in someone. It's sort of a hero fantasy. I know. David in Tennessee. By the way, the original spelling of Ohio, A-L-A-B-A-M-A. I ain't exactly proud of that, but I'm not quite so sure that David's wrong. I mean, my God. Football players wear some pretty... profound body armor at this point in time. I mean, one of the brands is Under Armour. Does it have to be Kevlar now to play in the state of Ohio? 60,000 people. How many people? Wait. Screw 60,000 people. How many people fit in the big horseshoe in Columbus when Michigan comes calling? That's like 100,000 people, isn't it? 97? 105? God, if I don't get the number wrong, some Ohio State fan will probably bust a cap in my ass. And not one of those drunken sods. I mean, come on, it's a college football game, okay? I attend college football games, or have in the dim and distant misty past. And I can tell you there's a lot of beer consumed. Hell, at WVU, you consume the beer in the parking lot, and then you put the liquor, the hard liquor, for the actual game time, you put that in a double-bagged Ziploc, and you duct tape it to your side. That way you can pass the pat-down. But now, in Ohio, pat-downs will probably be illegal. Do you remember the story last week about how it's illegal in Florida for a doctor, a pediatrician, to ask the parents of a child whether they have firearms in the home? Because we want to protect against the overreaching tendencies of a tyrannical government run by that one. Right? Well, this is the same thing. Well, can we have pat-downs at the Big Horseshoe? Absolutely not. That'd be a violation of our Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms right there in Section CC, Row 12, Seat 122 and 123. Sides, if you pat me down, I'll never be able to get that little amazing blue bastard if he gets away from us. I got to tell you, I read this story and I was shocked. And I'm pretty well past shock. Even Alabama hasn't come up with this. I don't think. I don't know. Maybe I need to put the mat signal up in the sky and see if Osborne can tell me whether the Alabama legislature's gotten around to getting past all the Sharia laws and the secession bills and the nullification bills to make sure that... No, even Alabama knows better. You would not... They poison trees in Alabama over football games. And you're going to turn those loonies loose with firearms at Bryant-Denny or Jordan-Hare or Legion Field? Oh, hell no! So let's review. Because again, I think this actually finds a way to tie into previous topics. I think this is another case of the oppression fantasies of the right wing. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, I don't know about you, but if I live somewhere that it's okay to strap on old Betsy and go get good and liquored up, or even have a salad, I ain't going. And you know what? I'm not going to take my family with me to a football game where it's possible that some crazy bastard with a firearm in his pants and 3.5 gallons of Bud Light is suddenly going to get concerned about the fact that he's got Ohio State and 3.5 and shoot the place kicker. In other words, what we're talking about here is the marginalization and, in fact, the ghettoization of normal people. Because you and me, we don't want to be anywhere that those lead-laden freaks might be. And I love the defense that they always offer. Well, these are law-abiding citizens, and they've been through a class, and they know how to field strip the weapon, and they can do it blindfolded with their tongues pierced. And they can just slip the, they can put the little pins there, the firing pin, they put it through the hole in their tongue and just stick it out there, and blindfolded, they can stick it up and drop that firing pin right in there with a hole in their tongue. That's how good they are with their guns. This does not reassure me. Because I don't want Sergeant York licking the front sight of his gun because it cuts down the haze when you go to blast the snapper. I don't want to sit in the local TGI McFunsters in Beckley wondering when a domestic dispute over the fact that little Timmy won't eat his boiled egg off of his Cobb salad becomes a matter for the local SWAT team. And so we stay home. All the normal people stay home while all the weird gun people go to the restaurants, and we just hope that one of these days they'll just get it over with and take care of matters and shoot it out, and hell with it. No, we don't hope that. We hope that we actually live in a society that someday will come to its freaking senses. Yeah, we hope that. We hope that in one hand and we in the other one, and we know pretty damned well which one's going to fill up first. Remember, Grant, you're going to want 8-foot thick walls and 30 feet high ones. And you're going to want twin 50s at every corner and in the middle of each one. I highly recommend studying the architectural style of Roman camp making. Todd just wrote in. No cussing. Guns at stadiums? No cussing. Guns okay. NFL stadium rules. I'm afraid of this, but I'm going to do it anyway. From World's Dumbest Brawlers. Come on, you can do it.
During the fourth quarter of a Buffalo Bills game, one fan asks another to put out her cigarette.
As you can see, still plenty of good seats available at Buffalo Bills games.
You just know this is not going to go anywhere good. Come on, dog. Don't waste your time with her. Buffalo, New York. Wrong accent.
Don't waste your time.
Skinny bitch is wrong. You can't smoke there. You're not allowed to.
Yeah, okay.
Pansies. Put her light up.
Oh, she's up the ante. She's going to sit right there and blow it in his effing face. Now, remember, this is an NFL football game, granted, in an almost empty stadium in Buffalo. But even though it's almost empty, there are enough people there that if it was in Ohio and, say, 1 in 10 people had a gun, one of the two people around her would likely be toting. Yeah, now they're punching. Yeah, they're brawling in the stands.
That's right. You take up for your boo. Knock her down the bleachers.
And this is just any given. This isn't a Buffalo problem. This is any given Sunday in the NFL in the United States of America, right?
Right. And in Ohio, that has two professional NFL teams, namely to wit, the Cincinnati Bengals and the Cleveland Browns, they're going to add firearms into this mix. And then there's the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Cleveland Indians and the Cincinnati Reds and the Columbus and then the Columbus Blue Jackets NHL squad. Oh, this is going to play so well. This is just a delight. Ron and Raleigh noting, hey, Bob, Charles Texas Tower Whitman was a law-abiding citizen until the first shot. They all are, aren't they? And this in from Darlene. Bob, I'm grateful for the filibobster you just gave. You're one of the few progressive talk show personalities, I didn't know my personality, I'll have to tell Agnes, who consistently speaks out on behalf of women and against misogyny or gynophobia. There's a word that runs rampant in American society. Many of the progressives out there, Tom Hartman, Ron Reagan Jr., etc., may comment here and there, but they don't get all that worked up about sexism like you do. Most of the time, they don't even want to touch the abortion issue with a 10-foot pole. Interestingly, however, I do see them getting very worked up on behalf of gay men. But it just seems that the mistreatment of women isn't treated with the same kind of outrage. Like with Bill Maher, I completely disagree with him. Women are treated abominably in and by this country. That guy in the audience who screamed out during the show and then was removed was correct. He shouted to Bill to think about what American predator drones did to Muslim women and children. Maher brushed it off, more pissed that the guy disrupted his show than really thinking about the substance of what the guy had said. Bottom line, there is something in this culture that allows men like Arnold to get away with what he did. We see guys like this, high-profile men, doing this all the time to the women they supposedly love. In some respects, women have been conditioned by this male-dominated society to enable this kind of behavior in men. That is why I am so grateful to see someone like Maria Shriver walking away from that jackass rather than standing by him. Yeah, thank God that, you know, they didn't have to have the press conference where she did the Mrs. Vitter thing and stands next to the freak and justifies it. No. Darlene says, speaking of transgender individuals, I've always felt so bad for them. A former best friend of mine, a gay man, showed extreme prejudice and hatred towards a transgender individual who was singing in this bar in New York City. I felt so bad for the man who wore such an expression of pain on his face as he sang that my heart went out to him. I was incredibly shocked and perplexed at the prejudice my friend displayed. I didn't understand why he, as a gay man, was not completely empathetic to this transgendered individual. He was threatened by something. Or maybe he just got off on being able to look down on someone else. Oh, as it was explained to me via the myriad guests that Peter Godbold had on Strictly Confidential, that is a whole subculture of dysfunction that you don't even want to... I mean, yeah, you should contemplate it. You should know about it. And there's a pecking order. Stop that. All I said was pecking order. In fact, a reference to it reared... Oh, no, don't use that one either. Showed up this past Saturday in a segment on Saturday Night Live featuring the ambiguously gay duo. That's a cartoon series that's been... It's been funny. But this last episode, they got Dr. Bighead or whatever... turned them into, used his flesh ray on them and turned them into real people. It was hilarious. Among other things, because the original voices of the ambiguously gay duo, namely Stephen Colbert and Steve Carell, were the villains. But at one point, the lizard guy said, is it possible these two might actually be bi? And both of the evil scientists turned around and said, shut up! And the Steve Carell bad guy said, bi people are just men, gay men who occasionally sleep with women. And there's a bigotry about that, too. There's bigotry all over the place. It's almost inescapable. By the way, David in Tennessee reminds me, there's the Toledo Mud Hens, and don't forget the Columbus Arrows, the AAA affiliate of the New York Yankees. Yeah, they used to be something besides the Arrows, though. They were the Clippers. Columbus Clippers? Was that what they were? I remember seeing them play in the AAA International League when I was a little boy, play the Charleston Charlies, the AAA affiliate of the Pittsburgh Pirates. This in from... just in case you were wondering, Bob's probably just overreacting a little bit. This in from David in South Carolina. Man murdered over University of South Carolina Clemson game, suspect charged. Suspect, James Walter Quick. Victim, Richard Allen Johnson. November 26, 2006, Lexington County Sheriff's Department detectives charged a 42-year-old Lexington man with murder after he allegedly shot and killed another man with a high-powered rifle during a dispute about a bet that the two had made over the USC-Clemson football game. Yeah. Detectives determined that Quick and Richard Johnson, who had been drinking beer all afternoon, began arguing shortly after the end of the Clemson-USC football game. Quick and Richard Johnson, who were good friends, bet $20 on the outcome of the Clemson-USC football game. Quick bet that USC would win the game, while Richard Johnson bet that Clemson would win. Quick and Richard Johnson watched the football game on television at Richard Johnson's home. After the game ended, Quick and Richard Johnson began arguing about their bet on the football game while they were outside Richard Johnson's home. The detective said during the argument, Quick went to his Chevrolet Corsica and retrieved a high-powered rifle that Quick normally uses for hunting. Quick then turned towards Richard Johnson and fired one shot from the rifle at Richard Johnson, striking Richard Johnson in the chest. Deputies who responded to the call about the shooting included incident found Quick standing with his arms folded across his chest and leaning against his car, which was parked in the front yard of Richard Johnson's home. Officers arrested Quick without incident and recovered the rifle that was used in the murder in Quick's car. Well, being a good old boy, he'd probably already cleaned the rifle gun. Want more of those stories? The Republicans in the Ohio legislature and the Republican governor do. Beautiful, ain't it? I don't care. If this thing goes into law, I will do anything I can to get detour around Ohio. And there ain't no way in heaven or hell you could ever make me stop for no Skyline Chili or Gold Star in Cincinnati, even if I like the stuff. You couldn't make me do it. And I was thinking about trying to get to a Reds game with Ferg this summer. The only availability was a Giants game, kind of in the hope that we'd see Tim Lincecum pitch. If this thing gets passed in time, the whole damn stadium may be an armed camp of people with crosshairs on the freak. Hey. So, enough of this. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Cossack, what's up, man?
Philip Bob String away, are you?
It would appear.
Couple of things from last night. I want to be a slave, Bob. I want to be a multimillionaire slave. Paid by Medicare.
Yeah. Yeah, one of those slaves that has to give up a few thousand dollars out of his millions every year. Makes slavery, that slavery business sounds pretty tempting, doesn't it?
God. How can you say something that ignorant, that stupid, and not drop dead instantly?
You know, another movie reference. Remember that scene in Casablanca where Sam looks at Rick and says, drinking all this champagne going to take some of the sting out of being occupied, don't you reckon? Yeah, all them millions take the sting out of that enslavement.
God, how can you even put those two things in the same class? They're not even close to near each other.
Two words: white privilege.
God, how about white ignorance?
No, really, it's a function of white privilege, Cossack. Because because people like Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and Ron Paul are so divorced from the actual struggle of what it is to be a normal human being that the closest they can come to, my God, They are a psychiatrist's dream come true. I mean, this is the one where the psychiatrist puts an entire family of six through medical school just doing the psychoanalysis on those two, that father and son freak team, okay? They are so divorced from reality that the only way that they can comprehend involuntary servitude, you know, chopping cotton, is to imagine that paying taxes is the same thing as that. And if that doesn't just make you want to run rabbits, I don't know what would.
Not even close. And about that idiotic article you're talking about tonight, first of all, how ignorant do you have to be to even write that title? Because...
And that's the funny thing. This thing, I mean, it went down the memory hole. It is gone, gone, gone.
Why was it up in the first place?
Bingo. I want to hear about the unemployed person. You know, I'm generally very, very sympathetic to the plight of the unemployed. But the unemployedly stupid, mean, racist, bigoted, hateful? That guy, I got not so much sympathy for.
No. I mean, first of all, the whole idea of attractiveness is A, culturally based, B, racially based, or clan based, or whatever, and it's individually based. What I find attractive, you may think is hideous.
Well, there is that whole one person's nightshirt is another person's pajamas thing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, show me a cute redhead and I'm, you know, and that's it. I'm done. You know? But that's, you know, that's my particular bent. That's
married,
my particular week.
Married to a redhead here, you know.
Yeah, you understand what I'm saying.
Oh, it's kryptonite.
You know.
I mean, I'm powerless. But, you know, again, I acknowledge my caveman nature, and I try to rise above it. But I have, you know, I've got a particular redhead problem.
Right.
Yeah.
But you probably have a weakness for redheads as opposed to blondes.
Don't know where it came from, but I mean... crippled, kryptonite, really.
And usually they have personalities to match.
Well, I mean, is that, you know, within a realistic conversation about this particular topic, is that some sort of genetic hardwiring? Because my genetic history for the last, you know, 5, 10, 15,000 years probably has been blondes and redheads. Although, I always thought that the brunette from ABBA was a lot prettier than the blonde.
Yeah.
And I only say the brunette and the blonde because I don't remember their names.
I don't either.
Which is probably a character flaw on my part.
I see their faces, but I cannot recall their names. But, no, really, I mean, is this supposed to be a serious article?
Yes. I mean, I reloaded the thing and reloaded the thing and went to the other link that it was linked to, and nobody was there saying, oh, they got us, it was the Onion. No, because see, my little detectors, all the time now, because there's so much crazy crap out there that you just tend to look at it and go, oh, no, not going to get me this time. No. You know, because, and maybe this is the point, Cossack, crazy is the new normal.
Yeah.
You know, Texas Betsy, our blogger, sent me today the story about coal in the classroom for fourth graders that we talked about.
Oh.
And Agnes has sent me the story, and about six other people have sent me the story. And Jude first sent me the story last week because she saw it on Malloy's website, and I guess he touched on it last night as a rerun or something in the third hour. But that's one of those you look at and you know they wouldn't. And then you go, wait a minute. Where am I talking about? Yes, they would.
Yeah.
By the same token, just because I get up in the morning and my little smart ass lights just beep, 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 you know, because it's been sleeping all night. It's got a, and so I'm watching, I forget which show. I think it's the one that comes on after Morning Joe, and they've got this segment about what's for lunch at the, what's the soup of the day at the White House. No, really, they do that, Cossack. I mean, and so I look up and think, oh, today's soup of the day at the White House, and there's that little talking goatee guy, the Chuck Todd.
Oh, that thing.
Yeah. And he says, and today's soup of the day at the White House is French onion soup. And I thought, oh, my goodness. No, really? 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 Is the soup of the day at the White House French onion soup? Do I really have to put the tinfoil helmet on at 9:15 in the morning? Do I really got to do that? Because, of course, and then I immediately tweeted, because you know what? When the White House soup of the day is French onion soup the day after the DSK-IMF debacle, I'm thinking this is not a boating accident.
God. That's insane. Although I must recommend to you the bean soup in the Senate cafeteria.
Oh, no. See, I love the Dirksen Senate cafeteria and the, what is it, I forget which House office building it is. But, their cafeterias are delightful. Or they were until John Boehner got hold of them and made sure that all the biodegradable things went away and everything that they put food on now is made of a, you know, some sort of a hydrocarbon. You know about that, right?
Yeah. Idiocy.
No, I would crawl across ground glass for the House cafeteria's macaroni and cheese. I kid you not. I mean, that stuff is just good.
That stuff is good. Yeah, and like I said, the bean soup is to die for. It really is. I forget which senator was that mandated that bean soup will be available every day.
Oh, that sounds like some New Englander, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's either a New Englander or a hillbilly. But it's only a hillbilly if it's brown bean soup. You know, Pintos or October, something like that.
Yeah. And,
I gotta go back to, Dominique Strauss-Kahn for just a minute.
Sure.
There was something mentioned, and of course, again, I watch that stupid show on MSNBC every morning. I just, you know, it's when we get up, it's what's on. Cartoon Network is in infomercials at that point. And I don't need a pair of pajama pants. Pajama jeans, that's what it is, pajama jeans.
Oh, God.
By the way, Ron helping out here. In ABBA, the beautiful blonde woman was Agnetha Folkstag. Flotskott. Oh, darn, and the brunette was Annie Fried-Lingstad.
Yeah. Annie.
So, I love their names too, Ron. I just can't pronounce them. I'll get hate mail from Scott in Sweden now. Joe Scarborough is such a spewing fountain of ignorance. Right?
Yeah.
And so he thinks it's really funny that the French people are objecting to the media circus that surrounded Monsieur Strauss-Kahn being handcuffed and dragged into a car and driven away to Rikers Island. And it was just high-flipping comedy, Cossack, because those French, well, they've got laws that say that you can't demean an arrested person before they've been adjudged guilty by putting their picture in the paper and taking pictures of them in handcuffs and under arrest. Those sissy French.
Yeah, and what would happen if the French arrested the head of the World Bank, who was an American, in France?
We'd probably send SEAL Team in to shoot him in the face.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing is, we act, you know, that right-wing turd blossom moron is so lacking in any basic understanding of the judicial system in this country that he doesn't understand that we have a presumption of innocent until proven guilty, a presumption of innocence, and that any country that took that seriously would also take seriously a ban on being able to humiliate and otherwise abuse an arrestee with a gang of prison fetish paparazzi clicking away as he's put in the car. Because that paparazzi treatment is inherently a presumption not of innocence, but of guilt. And by putting it in the for-profit media, it then reinforces that presumption of guilt, does it not?
Correct. Well, it's like, as in that article that I sent you on DSK, and by Whitney, where he was pointing out that the media did what it so ably does, and that's to destroy a person's life. Just think about, for example, you remember Richard Jewell?
Oh, yes. The Centennial Park, Atlanta.
Yeah. Yeah, the guy who saved a bunch of people's lives, and then the media descended on him, and suddenly he was a person of interest to the FBI, ruined his life totally, and it turns out he was totally innocent. But that didn't help him any. I mean, he died shortly after all this crap from the strain, essentially. But his life was ruined. He finally managed to get a job.
And he died in some sort of miserable circumstance, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, he died essentially from strain. Yeah, you know, something like the guy that they... that the FBI originally fingered for the anthrax attacks.
And all along, the guy who planted the bomb was that Eric Rudolph son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Who had been covered for and hidden and underground railroaded by the right-wing Friends of Jesus fundies, right?
Exactly.
You'll never convince me that Randall Terry and that whole filthy crowd didn't know exactly where Eric Rudolph was every minute of every day, just like I'm convinced that the Pakistanis were actually keeping bin Laden under house arrest.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, let me see if I can get these next two calls in, because after all that filibobster, everybody deserves a chance. Awful good to hear from you, Cossack, and thank you for your patience. I don't think one person has ever blinked on the line with the patience that you blinked this evening, and I appreciate it.
No problem.
See you, Cossack.
All right, take care, Bob.
Bye now. I'm honored. Most people will not blink for me. But, Bob's still talking. I'm hanging up. Screw him. See, there's one who did that. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen, so... I'm sorry, I'm kind of confused with that first article you were talking about. I mean, is that a joke? I'm sorry, I just was sort of not making the connection. Now, this was in Psychology Today?
Yes.
And it was...
I have sat on it for 24 hours waiting for somebody to post and say, oh, we're sorry, that was The Onion.
And so it was subsequently pulled, you're saying, though?
Oh, yeah, it disappeared. It went down the memory hole in a hurry. And I checked on Nicole Bell's Crooks and Liars post, and I clicked on the Cash Virgin version, and that one's gone, too. But there's nothing on here saying, update, big joke, not real.
Well, no, but I mean, I don't see where the joke would be in that, though. You see what I'm saying? That's why I was kind of... taken aback, as it just was...
Right, no, I mean, there's no way that that's funny, unless you're...
I didn't really understand the point of the article. That's what that's why I was calling to get some clarification. I mean, yeah, I did, you know what I mean?
Well, it is,
Some sort of generalization and that they're printing, or you know what I mean? I don't mean to be obtuse. I'm just kind of like, it just seems so.
No, I mean, and because I don't, we don't have the actual cached version handy. You know, it's kind of like reading Saint Jack Offius writing about the disappeared writings of Saint Whackbottom, and we can only read the first saint's commentaries on it.
Well, no,
when this guy quotes the article that says, for example, because they have existed much longer in human evolutionary history, Africans have more mutations in their genomes than other races. You really do kind of have to go.
Yuck. I mean, yeah, no, I don't. It's so weird when these sort of eugenic skew type shit just keeps popping up. You know, like Malthusian. I lump all that kind of stuff together, but this seems to be all wrapped up with the usual misogyny, which is what you correctly identified, because if you're calling one group of women ugly, you're still objectifying everyone else.
Sure.
Right. So, I mean, and it's just kind of, but to me, I'm just more sort of like, I was like, really? Is this worthy of a discussion still? You see what I mean? I don't know. I guess because, you know, the circles I run in, it's just like, oh, my God, we're all so fat and old and different colors and whatnot. It's not really a priority. You know, it's just kind of, I don't really know. I don't, you know, my family has such a huge mixture of different colors and body types. And I don't, it's just kind of odd. I just thought, especially in a magazine like that, it's like they might as well be saying that gay people have a disease. You know, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, we really have, you know, we have an author's name here. Santoshi Kanazawa.
Right, yeah.
And he uses phrases like objective attractiveness.
And what popped in my mind when you were talking about it, of course, you know, because I have issues myself, but I was thinking about that article I read where they're saying they did a survey of what people, men are clicking on. They're all clicking on fat women and penises. Did you see that article?
No.
It's like a survey. They
Well, there I am out in the cold again.
Well, the straight men, not only are they looking at pussy, but they're also looking at penises, and they look at more fat women than they do skinny women. So I just, you know, it was a really sort of comprehensive, you know, web type of survey that somehow tracking, you know, people's searches. And I just was kind of laughing because it's like, well, yeah, surprise, surprise, The bony bitches are definitely...
Well, and it's not just
fantasy.
That. You know, look at the proportion of American men, and I will sit here and use myself as a sort of guinea pig of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm involved in a business that puts me behind a computer a lot of every day.
Mm-hmm.
I have, since the time I started back into radio in 2003 to now, I have put on something approaching 50 pounds. Okay, so I would say, and I'm trying to be as scientific as I possibly may, Sandra, I would say that those guys are clicking on pictures of penises because they haven't seen their own in quite some time, and they're looking at bigger women because they know they ain't got a prayer with the stick people.
Well, I mean, but...
Now, I'm being halfway facetious, but there might be an element of truth in that.
Yeah, it could be, you know, yeah, just dealing with what's real, but also, when you look at how distorted the body image pushers are, like, the latest thing is showing these really skinny women eating huge portions. I mean, how warped is that? You know, where they have these skinny bitches with huge hamburgers or... eating huge portions.
Oh, like the Carl's Jr., Hardee's, Paris Hilton ads where she fillets a cheeseburger?
Right, but there's other ones, too. I mean, it's sort of a staple in advertising these days, and it's just kind of like, come on. So, you know, if you have to retreat into what the real world is, you cannot make connections with those images unless you're a teenager and a child, which is why they're so damaging, because teenagers, somewhat, but children, not at all, can make valid judgments that way. You know what I mean? I mean, I can look at that and just think, oh, God, and click on to the next, you know, image that I'm interested in. But the sort of black women are ugly meme, it's just like, God, I don't know. I don't know why I'm so sanguine about it. It's just kind of...
May I suggest it's because this shit should have been buried with the Klan 100 years ago?
Well, yeah, it's just, you know, it's obscene, but, you know, I also sort of can sort of throw in with some of the sort of discussions I've had with other people in my family about, you know, some of the problems within the black community with image stuff. And, you know, it's just within the community, too, the sort of self-loathing and, you know, you're constantly working against it in some levels and in some ways.
Well, and you know, because first of all, there was 100 years, 75, 100 years of marketing in America in which black people did not exist.
Well, yeah, and this, you know, and then even... You know, even now, the sort of distortions keep coming, and...
I mean, Will Smith still can't get a script where he runs off with a white woman at the end of the movie.
Yeah, or Morgan Freeman with his constant no-chemistry ass with every white woman he ever made a movie with. That's really tedious, too.
Right.
Because that ain't based in reality. It's like, huh? So, but that's another whole sort of...
But that's also American reality.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the reality of Europe. It's not the reality of England, is it? I mean, this is an American phenomenon. It seems.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I'm just kind of, you know, just stunned that sort of, you know, I don't know. I have to look, see if I can find that article myself because it's just way. Bizarre.
Well, I mean, if you start at Crooks and Liars and work backwards, you might come up with it. But both the link that says cash version and the actual link to you know, the study. I mean, she acknowledges right off the bat. It appears the uproar over it caused Psychology Today to pull it down, but there's still a cash version for you to see that it was all too real, and your search did not match any documents. Is what you get when you go to the link to the cash version.
Well,
that's twice I did that.
Yeah, I mean, that's neither here nor there. The point of it is that sort of mentality, I mean, just look at how you're constantly how Michelle Obama is constantly being picked apart, that woman.
Oh.
You know what I mean? It's just kind of, it's so over the top. It's like, what is the problem?
And, you know, you mentioned in our conversation last night, Sandra, Cornel West. And I've been watching my Twitter feed all day, and that poor man is under the bus.
Oh, so why? What's going on? Why? Like, you have to explain this.
Well, I mean, you know, he does that piece with Chris Hedges.
All right, yeah, yes.
And, let's see, I've seen Cornel West is petty.
Oh, well, these are the Obama sycophants coming to the
right
fence, isn't it? Right.
Yeah.
Okay, I know what you're talking about.
The Obama squad.
Right.
Yeah. He's petty. He's doing the same thing that he complains of. You know, Cornel West is a privileged black man in Ivy League academia. How dare he say anything about whether or not what kind of gatekeeper does he think he is to declare whether or not Obama's sufficiently black? Oh, I mean, it's under the bus and tire tracks.
Yeah, well, no, and you know, of course, his position will be used against him when he stumbles away from the expected towing of the line, especially, you know, in the Jack and Jill circles, if you know what I mean by that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, no, but I have to say that I was kind of taken aback by his analysis, but see, for me, I agree. So I'm not going to be one of the people throwing him under the bus. I mean, my issues with Cornel West has been more the, he's obsessed with the talented 10th sort of W.D. Du Bois bit, which, you know, cream off the top of the blacks to manage the culture mentality. That was the sort of knock for me with W.D. Du Bois, because what about the 90% of us that aren't sort of in the Ivy League or getting around, or, you know, so there's that whole mentality with West that I always had issues with, but I certainly don't fault him for the bridges that he tries to make with, you know, different communities within the black community. And, you know,
no, West, and frankly, I mean, he makes legitimate attempts at overtures into the white community as well.
Right. And
he does it without coming across like a sellout.
No. If he's come to this realization about, you know, what's in the White House, well, you know, he's within his rights to do that. And the Obama followers will get upset because he has some legitimate pull in some circles. That's mainly why they're probably upset, because it resonates. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, and so because Obama is going to be hard pressed to try to show exactly what he's done to help working black people, for damn sure, really. That's for real. So they got to keep the facade going. They got to keep it going, so they can't really afford to have anybody kind of stray too far. And if you do, you'll just be called an elitist, and hopefully that'll shut you down. I don't mean to be so cynical, but I've had it with how blacks are managed by their so-called leaders. It's scandalous when there's a million of us locked up. You understand?
Yeah. I mean, well, that was the other thing with Dominique Strauss-Kahn. You know, every time I see one of these stories crop up, I think, okay, is this the point where we actually have a conversation about the really, really sick, dysfunctional American prison industry?
Well, interesting you should mention that. There's this new site that's starting. You know, because you know how I was complaining about the whole Bradley Manning? Yeah. But what about the other motherfuckers who've been locked up in solitaire? Funny enough, that's starting to percolate. There's, like, different groups now are coming together to actually make some noise about the 80,000 people at any given time who are in solitary confinement.
Yeah, I saw a report. Now, curiously enough, it was on Russian TV, not American.
Yeah, well, you know, at this point...
But about the solitary problem. It's used more and more as a means of... we're approaching the sort of science fiction human warehousing.
Yeah, no, and it's sort of, you know, I'm glad to see you have, like, whatever her name is, Alexander, who wrote the Jim Crow thing. You know, other voices now are popping up about our incarceration, you know, gulag. I mean, because the prison, yeah, because you can't just rah-rah about Bradley Manning and not make the leap to, oh, wait a minute, wow, this is throughout the U.S., and now we have prisons that cut off people's communications, especially for, like, Muslims and so-called environmentalists who do direct action. Have you heard about these places?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you know, and because...
You know, that Colorado Supermax facility?
Right, and then you have... And I'm wondering what's going to happen to that kid who got sentenced to 10 years for, like, you know, buying land from, you remember that guy?
Oh, yeah, out in Utah.
Right, and he's supposed to get sentenced to, you know, up to 10 years of some madness, and, you know, he would probably be a candidate for those sort of severe communication restricted type of...
Well, even if he isn't, being as he seems to act like a fairly self-actuated individual, it will not take him long to cross somebody in the system and get his ass there in a hurry.
Yeah, well, no, but the whole point of it, though, is if we, you know, if we're as progressives, and I must put that in quotes from now on, I swear, if we're going to, you know, look at that situation and not examine it broadly, I can't get on board.
No, because if you remedy it for one, and don't remedy the system, you didn't even remedy it for the one you thought you were working for. At least the way I see it, because that just means the one that you got some relief for is getting out of the way and making room for the next poor bastard who's going to have it done to him. And you know, I don't know if you saw it or not, but this, and why he does it, I don't know. But this appearance that Jon Stewart did on O'Reilly, you know, I guess he's proving that he's not afraid to criticize him on his own show, and then he'll go and say to their face what the, you know, what he said on the program, blah blah. And it devolved into this conversation about, well, you know, Common went to Cuba and visited a cop killer. And it's like, oh my.
Well, you mean my girl that broke out of Leavenworth? The only person ever to?
Yeah.
Okay.
And apparently Common went to Cuba and visited her.
Yeah.
And so Bill O'Reilly wants him crucified or something. But, well, that just certainly means he's not fit to be in the White House. And so, you know, there sits Jon Stewart saying, you know, well, what about Bob Dylan? He wrote about Reuben Hurricane Carter. What about Bono? He wrote about Leonard Peltier. And the thing that bugged me is that in each instance they treated it as a, you know, Stewart, and it's Fox, and it's time limited and everything, but as if there's nothing to debate. You know, the case is not closed to anybody with a half a brain on Leonard Peltier.
No.
And Asada,
I would argue that Asada has grievances too, but I know that's, you know,
right.
You know,
and with her case, Stewart pointed out, well, you know, Common doesn't necessarily think she was fairly convicted. And, but, you know, poor old pasty faced doughy, you know, O'Reilly won't have any part of it. Cop killer.
Well, yeah, I mean, that,
and there's a fetish associated with that too. But earlier today, I guess what's his name, Henri Levy. The first name begins with a B. He's a pal of DSK's.
Bernard
Henri Levy.
Yeah.
Writes this piece criticizing the whole system that allows a human being to be, you know, paraded in front of cameras and deliberately humiliated before guilt is even established. And some snarky little punk at Mother Jones, I think, said, here, let me give you a translation, and proceeded to say, well, what this really means is, and, you know, well, screw the rape victim, blah, 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 blah. And that's not the thing. Bernard Henri Levy may be a total horse's ass. Apparently, he talked Sarkozy into bombing Libya.
Yeah, he's sort of
cruise missile liberal, French style.
Yeah, he's big on saving the people by bombing them. But and that's neither here nor there. I mean, what he's talking about.
But it's a valid criticism. If, like I said with Cossack, if a person is presumed innocent, then you should not let the for-profit media treat him as if he is guilty.
No, but in the meanwhile, we're assassinating. You see what I mean? We're assassinating people around the world, so the presumption of innocence is on shaky grounds. Either.
Right, and I think it was last night I had someone email me and noted, or maybe it happened on my Facebook page, and noted, you know, that the Sarkozy allegation, not Sarkozy, Strauss-Kahn allegation of sexual impropriety seems awfully curious when you stand it up next to Julian Assange's sexual impropriety charge. I mean, is that what the new takedown is?
Yeah. Well, that always seems to be the ploy to deal with the elite. If you know, it does seem to be a pattern, for sure.
You know, they can gun people down with machine guns, and we can get over that. But
it's so bizarre.
It's very bizarre, and I'm not advocating for DSK, and I'm not advocating for Julian Assange either. I mean, it's possible that these things have independent realities, but by the same token, it would be nice if this really was the one moment when we could begin to have a conversation about the whole process.
Well, we got this, man. Talking about pleading, it was consensual sex now. I mean, they already got him in some defense planning mode. It's just like, you know, now the woman is lawyered up, and all of it is just,
Yeah, and I'll bet that's no legal aid lawyer neither.
No, but it doesn't resonate down here in the real world, though. It really is bizarre. I'm not trusting any of it.
And at this point in time, and I blame this on the for-profit media. How could you? How can you?
Well, I have to ask you if you've seen, and I don't even know the story, so maybe I shouldn't comment, but what is this? Is it Indiana? The court has, allowed for the total of the Fourth Amendment has been completely stripped?
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that. I saw that earlier today.
Yeah.
And you kind of did this really happen? Yes.
I'm once again kind of in Onionville with that one, but I guess that's real too.
Apparently so. It shouldn't be viewed as anything in particular. Anything particularly strange. Because this is the across the board weirdness that is just absolutely all over this country right now. I mean,
well,
you know, firearms in football stadiums?
Yeah, no, that whole story scares me because it's like, are we gonna let people who are drunk now just sort of walk around with guns? It boggles the mind. But also, I noticed that. You know, the Israeli thing is a bit of a worry.
It's...
And the reason it's a bit of a worry to me is because, well, if these fledgling democratic movements aren't working out too well, you know, maybe the focus will turn on Israel. I don't know.
At the same time, mind you, and I don't want to give him any undue publicity, but at the same time, that lo and behold, Glenn Beck has announced that he will have a rally for restoring purity of essence, peace on earth. I don't know. He's going to restore something like August the 14th, and he's going to do it in Israel.
Well, I wish, you know, maybe it'll be a time for him to, you know, meet his maker over there. That'd be great. I'm sorry to say that, but I'm sick of him.
Well, I get my question was, does this mean that John Stewart and Stephen Colbert are going to have a counter rally in maybe Gaza. Somehow I'm not seeing that happen.
But aren't they attacking some other boat too? Did you hear that story?
No, what?
There was some report that some flotilla is, you know, got assaulted or some madness. So I don't, you know, I dread that they could shift it all to Israel because
that's going to get mean and bloody.
Right.
In a hurry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking here. I saw the Indiana story earlier, and I sort of blew past it going, well, of course it's Indiana. You know, forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown. But I'm not surprised anymore. I'm not surprised, you know, I'm no more surprised by that than that Newt Gingrich has announced he wants literacy tests at the voting, at the polls.
Oh, come on, really?
Really, yeah. And you know who got pissed off about it, Sandra?
Who?
Alan West. Crazy-ass Alan West.
In what form?
Let's see, I think Progress journalist asked him, said, over the weekend, the presidential contender Newt Gingrich came out and said he'd like to see some sort of poll test, throwing out the idea that maybe voters ought to have a certain standard of knowledge of American history in order to be able to vote. What are your thoughts on that? And Alan West says, well, that's going back to some times that my parents had to contend with. I think we need to do a better job educating our young men and women in school, but we don't need to have a litmus test, no. So I guess you can count Alan West as not supporting the heroic candidacy of America's serial adulterer.
Heroic? Has that term been thrown out?
Oh, well, I mean, when you write a book about saving America, you know, that can only be achieved by a genuine conservative hero, right?
Well, it's interesting that the cleavages that are being shown with the whole Paul Ryan, God, he's really hitting the wall, that guy, because... and he's still trying to run that plan out, but he's not running for senator now, and, you know, his whole career seems to be at risk.
Right. Well, he could be an ex. I think he knows he's going to be an ex-congressman in a real hurry if he's not careful.
Right. I guess. But the thing is anyway, I don't know. I find him one of the most despicable legislators I've seen come around in a while.
Oh well, have you seen his Orwellian word invention lately?
Well, I'm trying to say that, you know what, him trying to say his plan is saving the safety net or something.
Yeah, but he invented an Orwellian phrase. He says, you know, the president says he wants us to have shared sacrifice, but what he's really talking about is shared scarcity. Since when?
Oh no.
Yeah, who's the scarcity going to be for? Because I don't see any shared scarcity on Wall Street.
Well, no, and I just saw a really disturbing breakdown of Congress. 60% are like millionaires, and 40% of those have $10 million and up.
Good work if you can get it.
But those people aren't going to, you know, it's no wonder that everything's being attacked and services-wise, because they don't, you know, anyway.
And now, realistically, because I don't necessarily know the law, Sandra, what happens, let's say you're Newt Gingrich. I mean, don't take it personally. But let's say you're Newt Gingrich, and you pull a Fred Thompson, and you go out there and run for president, get a bunch of campaign contributions, and then say, I hear my mother calling me. Do you get to keep the money?
Well, isn't that what his game is?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You get to keep the money, right?
Well, did that Christine O'Donnell person keep that money?
I think she did.
That's the thing.
Well, except I think she was badly in hock. But, you know, Newt has been a huckster for a long, long time. And I'm guessing he's flush. So he'll just get to keep the money.
Bizarre. Wow.
And Fred Thompson got to keep the money.
It's nice work if you can get it.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, yeah, see, I don't know all the ins and outs of that law. That doesn't seem...
And, you know, I can't imagine Donald Trump didn't raise a little bit of money before he declared that The Apprentice was more important than saving America.
Oh, yeah, but you got to pay for your own drug test to get $40 a month down in Florida.
Right, and you're a welfare queen if you take the cheese and the rice and the butter.
No, it's that's sick.
I know.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to follow up, actually. I'm going to look into that because I don't really know what the rules are for that. But they wouldn't be out there doing that night and day if there wasn't some sort of mean. Well, actually, Hillary went into debt, and didn't Obama pay that off?
Yeah.
Maybe it's just for Democrats they have to pay it back.
Right. I think it may be one of those IOKIYAR situations, Sandra.
Exactly. Well, listen, I'm going to let you go.
All right. You have a good night. Take care.
All right, bye.
Bye now. I got to tell you, the show flies by most nights, but this one just zoomed by. And I kind of hope it did for you without you having, especially if you're listening to a podcast later, without having to hit the shuffle button. This has been an interesting night, and I appreciate your time. And thanks, everybody, for contributing. You know what happened? We got what we needed tonight. We needed 15 Thrifty 250 members. Two people took care of 11 of those slots, and the rest of you made up the other four. And that is wonderful. Thank you very much. Because, you know, when people take up those extra slots, they're not just they're doing it for those who can't, because there are a lot in the audience who are unable to. And I hope you understand that there are a lot of people, well, that this is family, and that we're taking care of each other this way. Thank you very much. Thanks to everybody who makes it all happen. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next.